This week's episode of The Unwind is brought to you by Green Man Gaming. You can get 20% off the latest games by going to thecommentist.com and clicking on the banner.
All right, check it. Check it. What up, nerds? What up, nerds?
Context, okay, Rob.
What up, nerds?
Nerds?
What up, nerds? Welcome to episode 66 of The Unwind, a weekly show where we talk about tech, games, gadgets, and geek culture. My name is Rob Steller.
I'm Sean Thomas.
And I'm Josiah Hills. And so let's dive right into a bag of dice. Let's dive right into the topic, first topic of the show. I wanted to talk a little bit about money and messaging. So recently, WhatsApp announced that they're going to drop their 99-cent fee. And so a lot of people...
Let's just admit, it was a pretty egregious fee.
Well, I mean, considering that WhatsApp is mostly used in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
Like India is a big user and other parts of South Asia are big, heavy users of this and lots of places in Europe. So I think they actually had data where they were saying that they felt that the 99-cent fee was too much because... I didn't actually even realize this because I guess I never got to through the first year. But the first year it's free.
Yeah.
And then the second year is you pay 99 cents.
I don't remember.
Well, if you got WhatsApp early enough, from my understanding is you never got the fee. But,
I never paid for that.
You'd have to get it, I think, fairly early because I got WhatsApp a long time ago and it said after a year you got to pay 99 cents.
Really?
So.
Yeah. Huh. Maybe I did pay it and I just. Didn't catch it on my credit card.
Mr. Moneybags over here. Just dropping ones.
Yeah. It's like, it's not how I roll.
Just dropping those cents.
So anyhow, they dropped their fee and they basically said they're not going to do banner ads or commercial type things either. So, but what they said was that they were looking for ways for to be the intermediary for companies to contact you. So companies that you want to hear from contacting you. So it almost sounds
That's
like... support calls, you know? So instead of dialing a 1-800 number, potentially you can just contact customer support on WhatsApp. And that's a service that the business would pay for instead of paying for an 800 number or something like that. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about these different models and what do you guys think is going to be successful and what interests you the most. So let's go over some other models very quickly. There's Snapchat, and they had like, I think they added, Sean, you'd know better than me. They added some paid filters, which they recently just got rid of, right? Because they said they're going to do sponsored filters.
They've been messing with a lot of different models. The first thing they did was making the Discover tab, where companies could have a permanent spot on the page, and they could essentially advertise their things. I'm sure they had to pay to get on there. Then, yeah, more recently they did filters. They have a selfie. You can add an effect to your face.
Like rainbow vomit. And
yeah, yeah.
Eyes.
And the first day or two they rolled it out, everything was free, but pretty quickly they switched over to paid. And of course, all the best ones were paid. So I actually haven't used them recently, so I don't know if they've taken that away. But
I think they switched it up. They at least announced that they were going to switch it up. I don't know if they put this into effect, but they said they're going to drop all the fees on filters, and they're going to charge companies for sponsored filters.
Oh, okay.
Right, so there might be some kind of like Old Spice filter or Coca-Cola filter. Who knows? But that's their model moving forward with that. So some other messengers out there, Line, WeChat, Facebook. So Line and WeChat, they're well known for selling stickers and video games. It's almost becoming like a platform unto itself.
Yeah.
Reminiscent of early Facebook days. And Facebook M, I think they had an announcement very similar to what WhatsApp was saying, and not necessarily a surprise there since their own – since Facebook owns WhatsApp, but I think they are looking to be kind of the intermediary again between businesses and consumers so that, you know, I wouldn't, if I follow whatever Procter & Gamble on Facebook for whatever reason, because I get coupons and they might send me messages about the coupons or, like I said earlier, alternatively, I might contact them through Messenger, and Messenger has phone calls. I don't know if you guys have done an actual voice call.
Have you tried that?
I haven't tried it.
Yeah, I haven't tried it since they introduced it. I don't think I've ever done a call over WhatsApp either.
They don't support calling, I don't think, because that's what I feel like everybody uses Viber for. If I remember correctly, it doesn't support calling.
I don't know. I'll look it up real quick. But while I'm looking it up, Facebook was saying basically they might do the customer service thing. And then there's also the Facebook M, which is kind of a bot that helps you out. It's supposed to tap into your calendar and be able to answer questions. So it's kind of like a search plus a personal assistant. So kind of like a Cortana thing, being able to like look at your Facebook events and say, hey, you need to start traveling to this location, whatever it is. Right. Oops, sorry. I woke up.
Trying to talk to Cortana.
So
we apologize to all my girlfriend. Windows phone users. Rob.
Apologize to me.
So, you know, with that in mind, it might they might charge for that kind of extended bot access. There is a phone icon here on WhatsApp, so I'm assuming I can do a voice call.
I thought.
But do you think it just calls to the regular phone app? Because I think it connects to that.
Yeah, I don't know.
As far as I know, it would make a ton of sense for it to have some kind of VoIP protocol or something like that. But if I remember correctly, because all of my family members that use it, they all use Viber to call and they use WhatsApp for texting. It's incredible how popular it is in other places. It's kind of hard for Americans to grasp if you don't have family living abroad, because it's really not that popular amongst, I guess, American to American, but it's definitely much more popular across, you know, the ocean into other continents, like a simple way to.
And really, I mean, that's literally why I installed it. I have a friend who's German, and when she would go back to Germany, she just asked me to like install WhatsApp. So I installed it, and then another friend who was in Costa Rica. When she was in Costa Rica, we were using Facebook, but she moved to China, and they blocked Facebook, and so she could use a VPN for a little while, but it still wasn't a very good experience. So she started using WhatsApp, and so, you know, that's why it's on my phone.
Is WhatsApp isn't blocked in China? Or
no, I guess not. And they also recently started, I think, encrypting their messaging too. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, one thing before starting the conversation, obviously, I know it's a mix of talking about business models and ways to monetize, but WhatsApp is interesting because, I mean, it's owned by Facebook. Snapchat needs to find a way to make its own money.
Yeah.
And a lot of these other companies, Line, it's not a subsidiary or anything like that. Now, as far as I can tell, whenever Facebook makes big purchases, they leave the company alone, at least in terms of branding and things like that. You know, when Google, Apple, or Microsoft buy it, usually they become part of their own brand.
Right.
But now, I mean, Instagram is its own thing. WhatsApp is its own thing.
Oculus
is its own thing. Obviously, they're going to find ways to integrate it, but that's what... So it makes a big difference because... I don't know what Zuckerberg's plans are for WhatsApp. I don't think they're going to say one day, oh, hey, WhatsApp users, you're all Facebook members now. Like, that would just be ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But, and same thing, not to get into this too much, but Skype, I feel like, you know, Microsoft bought it a while ago. I don't know. I could be totally wrong. This might be anecdotal completely, but I feel like it's lost ground and that I don't feel like it has that name it used to, almost because I don't feel like they've done too much with Skype. But
They've integrated it into the OS, the Windows OS a lot. So it's a big part. That's helpful. It's like fully integrated into Windows Phone now, not the five people.
What about Windows 10? Like, do you get Skype?
I'm pretty sure it's pre-installed. 10? Yeah, when you get it. At least the what do you call it? The mobile app version of it, not the full desktop. I think that I had to install the Metro version of it.
Modern.
But I think it's a good user experience, right? Like I feel like Skype is more clear and less choppy than Google Hangouts.
I think all of my calls I do internationally are Skype.
Yeah, but with that said, I agree with your sentiment, Sean, in that I feel like it almost feels like they stood still. And partly is because they were so far ahead of the game.
Yeah,
right?
They've
had video calling, free video conferencing for 10 years now.
Yeah.
Like that, they just
Skype
had an anniversary.
Skype was the protocol everybody yeah. used. Like it was just everyone went through that.
And so, you know, my only gripe with Skype, no rhyme intended, but my gripe with them
stay
is that
stay tuned for Josiah's rap album.
I'm gonna drop it on the show.
Technical innovations.
But nice. They've kind of made a mess of Skype for Business because they wanted to layer that on top of their old Link messaging app, Microsoft. And it's just really
it's
a nightmare.
A Microsoft move.
Like they've integrated Skype into Outlook very smoothly on the iPhone, the Outlook app, and but it doesn't account for Outlook. Skype for Business. Like there's,
yeah,
it's just kind of the redheaded stepchild. No offense to redheads. I actually. You know, Paul's a redhead, so
we like him very
but,
much.
But just to start wrapping this up, what do you guys think about what's your preferred business model? Would you rather just pay outright for messaging? Do you like this idea of maybe it's supplanting, making phone calls to companies and using that to talk to customer service or something like that?
That's an interesting model, though, having a direct line to customer service through that.
Yeah.
Especially with Facebook, too, like integrating that into messaging where you have just an open line where, you know, I guess theoretically you wouldn't have to just sit on hold for a while or they can call you when they're ready, like those types of things that you would hopefully they'd be able to integrate into this. So that's appealing to me. Like I said, it's weird. Maybe I just didn't notice I paid the dollar at some point. but yeah.
Well, so, yeah, I mean, the customer service angle.
Stickers, right? Sean, you're a stickers man.
Well,
right?
There's those two things.
He likes the Snapchat things.
Oh, well, it's kind of like even when
puke
you compare.
Puke and rainbows.
well, okay, I want to say a couple things. First off, quickly, like this kind of parallels video games in that there are some games that do the pay-to-win model and some do purely cosmetic. And yeah. I feel like purely cosmetic are stickers and things like that mm-hmm. in text messaging versus what you're saying where businesses essentially having access through customer service, which sounds interesting, but I can't imagine that. Like, I would assume that at some point it's going to move towards we want to find a way to talk directly to potential customers.
Right.
So I don't know where that line is. It seems – then I want to also talk about with Snapchat. Snapchat is really interesting because they've made a lot of good moves to keep people interested in Snapchat. They – like, obviously, it's a super popular service, but they keep doing things that are – well, but that's the thing. So they keep doing cool things. Like, I thought the thing that they did with selfies was actually a cool thing, and they have fun things you could add. They added a thing where you can reverse video. They're doing a lot of smart innovations, but yeah, monetizing it, I really don't know how they can do it. The Discover tab was a smart move, but I don't think anyone really uses it. I actually thought some of them were really cool, but I don't really use them consistently. I don't think many people do.
They put ads in the daily ones, right?
Yeah, they do in that. So that's another
place,
themed, but still.
I don't know what they call.
Well,
stories, I guess?
Yeah, in some of the stories, they just do ads, which is another way. And considering their user base, I'm sure it makes a
decent
amount of money.
That was fine, though. Yeah, that was
but
fine.
But I don't know if that can like sustain. I don't know. I haven't seen their, you know, P&L, but I would think that that's not something that's sustainable, and that's why it gets into stickers could totally work, but I don't know long term what you can really do to make a lot of money. But this is a problem for all major tech companies.
Right.
How are you really going to make money off these kind of things?
Yeah, so it remains to be seen. I think, you know, a lot of people are talking about messaging as a new hotness, as a natural evolution of some of the social networks, which I think is ironic as hell because it all started with IM,
right?
With AOL, IM, and stuff like that, and Yahoo Messenger, and to say that it's coming back to that, I'm not buying it yet until they figure out this monetization bit. But that might be a way in, is to deal with businesses and kind of replace, you know, 1-800 numbers and stuff like that, or at least supplement the way that consumers contact businesses might be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about businesses, Rob.
Yes. So
I wanted to end that conversation with the AIM, the door closing sound. I just didn't have enough time
for the end of the show, man. So Glassdoor, I think this is the second year they've done this. So they're a website where you can look for jobs. I think like Monster and a lot of these other job finding sites.
Yeah.
So one interesting, they do a couple reports on the data that they have of the employers looking for employees and employees looking for jobs, average salaries for postings, things like that. So they put out an annual list for the second year of what they call the best jobs in America.
So what are the criteria they use?
So they use things, according to them, it's like they look at job flexibility and creativity and like, I don't know how true that is, but essentially they're looking at opportunity. So you can advance, like jobs you can actually move up in, salary, number of job openings. Like those are the key factors they're looking at.
Is Despot on that list? I think there's been a lot of. Sorry.
All right. So I just want to run down some of the top ones. Basically, nerds win. Nerds are winning. That's kind of the takeaway from this.
Yeah.
So number one is data scientists, which has a median base salary of $116,000.
That one's interesting.
Yeah. So we'll come back. We'll come back. So just the top five, right? So you have data scientist, tax manager, solutions architect, engagement manager, and then mobile developer as the fifth.
Wait, engagement manager is fourth?
Yeah, just as a guy smiling to another guy.
No, I mean,
they're engaged.
No, that's interesting that's that high. Because I would think it's like in demand. I just didn't know if they'd pay that much, but maybe
$125,000, Sean.
What?
Career move?
I mean, I guess
I saw this list and I was like, well, clearly I should have gone to college for something better than sociology.
Although I guess I don't know what engagement, but you know, like half these things though, it's so nebulous. Honestly, I'm sure it's not degrees that are
going
to get
so I'll keep going.
Like, data scientist. What is data? It's not scientist.
Basically. 6 through 10, HR manager, physician's assistant, which I think were higher up in the list last year. A lot of the jobs last year were more in healthcare. Product manager, software engineer.
By the way, and audit project manager. That is the most nebulous.
Product manager.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Project manager is lower down. But anyway, I mean, you look at some of this other stuff. Like, I'll just cherry pick some now. Like, software development manager, product marketing manager, QA manager.
A lot of managers.
Business development. UX, yeah. UX designer is in the top 20. Consultant. You want a general thing.
No, but I'm looking to be consultant 3.
Yeah.
So
electrical engineer, software architect. So a lot of these jobs though are very technically inclined. A lot of them STEM
is what any governor in this country would say. It's all STEM jobs. It's STEM education, blah blah blah, STEM.
Which is interesting. So Josiah and I both come from the education realm, and I mean, do you feel like, I mean, this is kind of an obvious answer, but do you feel like the schools are preparing kids for these types of jobs?
No.
Absolutely not, right?
No.
Why
not? That's why I go to work every day, is to like try to get us closer to that capability to have kids who can think critically, who can apply for jobs that aren't majors, right?
Right.
Like, because Sean, you were about to say, you know, like a lot of this stuff is really nebulous. Like, what the hell is an engagement manager? You know, what do you need to know? Well, you definitely probably need STEM, so you can look at you know, some of the computer science and understand the analytics and ask good questions. Are my company's customers engaged, et cetera? But you need some of the social elements too, about like,
right.
How do I get people excited? How do I manage the community, that sort of thing? And how do you kind of spread that out and delegate that work too, if it's a very large brand, right? So
yeah, and you pointed this out too. A lot of these are manager positions, so you're no longer just the individual doing a project, right? You are managing a bunch of people,
right? And that's the thing. So I mentioned, you know, I said STEM like 20 times 2 minutes ago, but once you throw in that term manager, you have to know how to write.
Right.
You have to know how to talk to people.
Yep.
You have to know how to communicate.
Yep.
And so it can't just be that stereotypical nerd doing science experiments in his mother's basement, or, you know, whatever have you, you know, taking apart his or her toys and stuff like that. You got to talk to people.
Making clocks.
And that's going to make the money for you.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, and you can actually see it in so much of Silicon Valley. You see a lot of influx of Asians because there's such a focus on STEM in a lot of Asian countries. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get into the whole debate over, you know, what kind of focus should students have. But I think you made the point, Josiah, that even if every kid isn't going for STEM, we need to at least have the ability to show kids that this is possible and this might be a desirable position. I mean, clearly the jobs are there, especially because everything, I think you were the one saying, I mean, coding could potentially be like the next regular language that everybody needs to know.
That's that's the class that should just be mandatory in schools to some degree, right? Like it's crazy enough that type of class, I know it's, you know, an issue of resources and things like that now, but it's crazy that there's not more of a push to just offer these classes in general. Never mind have it mandatory.
As long as the librarian is not the one who's teaching that class.
Well, they're called library media specialists now.
Yeah, Sean.
But you know, I was teasing Rob at work, but I was actually serious. You know, he made some suggestions at work, and I was like, well, this is coming straight from the fact that you've been coding for the last 2 months.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a very logical thing that he recommended.
I was very illogical before this. You know, I was all over the place.
He was making recommendations based on logic and organization. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, this is stuff that I thought about 6 months ago when we started these projects.
When I was illogical.
And I hinted at them, but I didn't want to, like, stop the boat and just force him to conform, and he came to the conclusion himself. And
size on a higher plane than me.
That's not what I'm trying to say. But
Rob learned coding, he programmed a robot. So this is actually a robot.
This is robot Rob.
That is the logic.
No, but it's interesting. Like five of the 25 of these jobs directly require programming skills.
Yeah.
And then just looking at 2015, for example, like going through the top 10, I mean, physician's assistant, software engineers up there, but business development manager, HR manager, finance manager, marketing manager, database admin, product manager, data scientist, sales manager, like almost none of those are technically inclined compared to this year's list.
Or rather, to get ahead in those areas, you need to be technically inclined.
Right.
To be a stellar, no pun intended, sales manager, you need to have the technology to, like, dive deep into the analytics behind your sales, find patterns, look for trends, etc., and find develop strategies to exploit those trends and follow up on them. So you need the technology to figure that stuff out now.
Right.
It's not just, well, I've got a gut feeling and I know people. Yeah, you still need that gut feeling and intuition, and you need to know people, but data is nice.
Mm-hmm. And even on a simpler level, you know, you had said this earlier, how the App Store had fostered app development. So many companies, groups, individuals are making apps, and the need for, I mean, programmers is just...
it's blown up.
Yeah.
Off the charts. It's just incredible because there's so many people that want... And I'm just talking app development, never mind more, but that's, I guess...
And coming from...
Well, that was on the top five, right? Number five was mobile app development?
This year, number five, which is... It's interesting because obviously when I was trying to do my startup and I did not have technical skills... Trying to hire somebody in Connecticut, first of all, was very difficult. But the price tag on those people, obviously, because there's a higher demand here. With
you can't
less people,
buy people anymore, Rob.
But the cost, I mean, it was a significant, like, they were making really good money, especially in some place like here where they're in demand. I mean, I'm sure everywhere they go, they're you know, having pretty good. I mean, their base salary right now, median, is 90,000 according to this. So
I expect the highest quality fart app. I don't want this, no pun intended, crappy product.
Yeah, looking at your resume, I've seen you've made Farty Fart and Farty Road.
Farts 2000. Farty Road.
But then let's also get into, so we're talking about,
it's happening now,
the technical elements with programming, things like that. Number one being data scientist.
Yeah.
I see this all the time. The obsession with being able to understand and look at data and how you can use that.
It makes
to,
me so happy.
I mean, it makes so much sense, especially with, you know.
Well, I think, you know, 5-10 years ago, that would have been business analysts.
Right.
But now we're calling them data scientists.
It's its own category.
But I think,
because they're using new tools.
Yeah, that's
And but I mean, the same responsibilities as what we would have called a business analyst.
Gaining insights through data,
I think, there's definitely a level of market analysis that's the same old, but I think there is a skew a little bit towards some more technical aspects because hopefully you're dealing with bigger data sets and figuring out how you can use this data for everything. Like, you know, you think about, I was reading something about the CEO of Tinder doing an interview and talking about how they essentially rate individuals on Tinder and they use that to match each other. Yeah. And so there's so many elements to that. Obviously, there's a bit of market research, like who's our target audience and things like that. But with this, you have to think about algorithms that could potentially use to make the product better. And I don't think there was a point in time where you could essentially take surveys all the time because all the data points are in the programs themselves.
Yeah.
So there's so many big,
Hadoop. The other side of this too is I would love to see hiring trends, right? So looking at who's actually getting these jobs, what education background, race background, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting. Jobs experience, I mean, like this could have been a topic unto itself, but Apple released their numbers. And I think a lot of people were kind of down on them because they're saying,
mixed.
You know,
it was
there's
mixed
only a, to it. You know, there's a relatively small, there's a relatively small increase in their minority hirings. But I think overall they are slightly better than other tech companies. But the other thing is you don't replace 100% of your staff every year.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So it's just, you've got to change from whatever it was, 30% to 32%. It's not like you rehired everybody.
No,
so,
you're talking about thousands and thousands of people in a big company like this.
I don't know. All I'm saying is there used to be a black iPhone. Now, I don't know. I'm just saying.
It really sounded like you said black guy phone. Like, oh, yeah. I guess there's a black guy.
You missed that release?
Snoop Dogg is just a ringtone.
So anyway, it's I don't know if you have any other remarks.
Well, just a quick thing with that. Do you know, though, so when those diversity reports came out, it was, I guess, in a weird way, somewhat monumental because most of the time companies don't release reports like this. But did any company, I mean, aside from just empty words, did any company really dedicate themselves to improving diversity, like actually setting something in place?
Yeah, I can't remember precisely which. I think some actually made announcements about actual numbers, right? Like, or percentages that they were hoping to get.
Mm-hmm.
But many just said, we need to do better.
Yeah.
Will it be like when I had a relative who was trying to immigrate here, and I kid you not, they INS or whoever it was sent him a chart, and it said where we aim to be or how long it takes to do all the immigration process, and it shows a bar, and it says 6 months. And I kid you not, right under it says where we are, and it's a significantly longer bar. It's like they wanted to do in 6 months. That's their aim. They're at like 7 to 10 years.
Yeah.
So, awesome. Like the difference, it was just hilarious.
But they're
that
trying.
They actually put it. Yeah. But their goal is really good. Yeah.
So anyway, this is just a, you know, interesting piece of data. I love data, and I've come from jobs that use data. So I do for breakfast. Nom 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 nom. Data rules everything around me. Yeah, that's right. So anyway, so I like seeing data in the news and things.
You should make a company. Start a company called Data Science. We're number one on Glassdoor.
Yes, so it'll be interesting. Hopefully we can get some more, you know, we'll continue to see these trends and, like I said, get the other data of who's getting hired from this too. So anyway, let's move up to the change-up, which is brought to you by Green Man Gaming. You can get 20% off the latest games by going to the Commentist website and clicking on the banner. And we're going to try something, a new question for the change-up, even though we were supposed to rotate. We kind of just not did that at all. So we're going to start something called Are You Going to Play It? And we're picking a release that's kind of now, soon, or just released, or will be releasing soon, and talking about whether or not you will play that game. So this episode, we're going to pick That Dragon Cancer.
The Ouya game.
The Ouya, originally the Ouya game. Yes.
Yeah,
Go ahead.
So just to give some background around it, it was originally announced for Ouya as a platform, and now it's on PC and PlayStation 4?
I don't know if
it's on
PC. Maybe it's just PC, sorry.
It's definitely on PC.
So the concept is that the game designer had a son who was diagnosed with cancer, and it was very grim diagnosis. And then after several bouts with cancer, he just kept beating it and mm-hmm. beating it. And so somewhere along the way, they decided to make a game about dealing
with
it.
Husband and wife, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was, it was husband and wife, and they decided to make this game, really just digital experience, I guess, mm-hmm. is a better way of putting it.
Yeah.
About living with a son with cancer. And eventually, after several victories and successes over the cancer, he he succumbed to cancer, I think, when he was about 5 years old.
Five, I believe, yeah. So a few years ago now, I think.
Yeah, recently, maybe 1 or 2 years ago.
Yeah. What's interesting, though, is they started making this game while he was still alive, and they actually used actual clips from him and their experiences in the game itself. Obviously, it's a very, very moving, very powerful experience of a game, I guess, if you want to call that. But a powerful experience, nonetheless, to go through and kind of see how this couple dealt with such a huge issue. So, what do you guys think? Is this something you want to play?
I think I will go through it and play. I'll say, go ahead and say play, because I heard an interview with the designer and parts, some clips from his wife. I think you heard it too, Sean.
On Reply All.
Yeah. And I think, I'm pretty sure he does call it a game, right? Mm-hmm. He refers to it as a game.
Yeah, he does.
So, yeah, I think I will play it. It's going to be heavy, and I'll have to sit down and carve out some time. It's probably something, I don't know exactly the play time.
I think it's around 2-3-ish, yeah. I think.
So I'll probably want to try to map out.
Wait for the DLC.
A week.
Sorry.
Sean.
Yeah. Maybe not play it in one sitting, but try to play it over a weekend or something, mm-hmm. and just knock it out and have time to reflect.
Yep. Yeah, it's definitely something. I feel the same way. It's something I don't want to. I actually prefer to play this in one sitting.
Yeah.
It's something that I want to play through. Have enough time to play through it, and if it's around 3 hours, I feel 3 to even 4 hours, I can, on a Saturday or Sunday, just take the time and say, okay, I'm just going to sit down and play this game.
Yeah.
And try not to have interruptions during it. And try to experience the whole thing from start to finish, and then reflect on it afterwards. I don't know if you feel any differently than that. I feel like it's not the type of game or experience that I would want to start today and then not get to it again for 4 days. And
yeah,
then play it again.
No, not at all. It's honestly short enough that you could easily finish it. I'm definitely interested in the game too. I mean, this gets into more of the what are video games, and I think it's taking gaming to another level, or interactive. Not interactive gaming, but this kind of thing just puts it on a newer level, and a lot of people were saying how powerful it was. I was listening to Reply All and I had to stop it.
Yep.
First of all, cancer is heavy enough, never mind if you add a child to it. There's just always something different with children, and I have a feeling this is going to be a very hard game to get through, but it's definitely something that sounds interesting, and I'm glad it's getting a lot of press.
Yeah, that's good.
Because it also sounds like it's good. This could be a game that you could easily totally mess up and be,
yeah.
And you'd also feel twice as bad because this is about your son that had this condition. But I've tried
to avoid reading too much about it. Like, I don't want to, any of the experience to be taken away from that. But it's interesting because this was obviously a huge coping mechanism for them to create this game and go through the process of creating this game. And it's also, it's in a way, it's a celebration of his life and, the experiences that they got to have with him.
And it's a monument, right? Instead of a tombstone, this is,
It will always be there for them to go back to. And also they can share it with everybody else too, which is very interesting. I'm looking forward to this. It's definitely the game where I want to be in a mindset ready to, it's like when, before you watch a movie, it's going to be heavy, you kind of want to be in the right mindset and be prepared for it.
Yeah. There's not going to be a EA soundtrack in the background for this one. And it's interesting. One quick thing you said, how this is kind of a representation of his life. It's not a tombstone, it's his life. It'll also be interesting because the parents put a lot of work into it, but the child, he has two siblings. I think they're both brothers, but I might be wrong.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting as they grow up, because I assume they're too young to really understand it.
Yeah.
But when they play it, how they'll react and things like that, because they had to live part of it too, because they saw their younger brother just go through all this. One interesting thing, so you can check it out, it's on Steam. It's not on consoles. I don't know if it is coming to it, but right now it's only on Ouya, Windows, and OS 10. But it's $15. And as we said earlier, it's a few-hour game. So I want to get into my topic, this question of length in gaming versus cost, and how you value gaming in general. So I feel like more recently a lot of these types of games have been coming out. $15 is a quarter of a quote full price game, which is $60. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a dollar mobile app. It's a decent amount of money. And let's just say that's like a 3-hour experience at most.
Yep.
Think about Gone Home. That was $20. It was controversial because it was basically like, even if you find everything, it's basically a 2, maybe 2.5 hour game.
Yeah.
And you have games like this. I was actually looking at a game, apparently that's really good, called Pony Island, which is a very short game, but it's only $5.
AKA Josiah's house.
Josiah's dream house. Hello Kitty Island Adventure.
But then you contrast that with something like The Witcher. The Witcher has oodles of content, and there, I mean, if you want to spend the money, there's, you can buy DLC and things like that.
I think the newer DLC is supposed to be another 20 hours or something like that.
I mean, it's absurd how much you could play in it. And then, you know, sandbox game like GTA and things like that. So my question is, how do you value games? And is there, like, for example, with Gone Home, let's all assume, have you played it, Josiah?
I have not.
Okay, so Rob and I both liked it.
You watched me play it, right?
I watched Paul play it, I think.
Paul played it? Oh, I didn't
know. Yeah, I wanted you two to play it. And then, so that game was, in my opinion, a really great game, but obviously it's very short. I'll admit, I did pirate it. The thing is, my point of this is, if you played a really good game, but that was that short, would you pay $20 for that? And
Sean would not, apparently.
So
he's going to pirate that shit.
So that Dragon Cancer is an interesting one because obviously the money goes to the family too. I have a lot less. Like, I put that kind of in its own category because, like, I want to contribute to this family and, you know, for the experiences and stuff like that. So that's different to me than just some go and shoot a bunch of zombies for $10, you know? I think it comes down to how you're going to, well, obviously you touched on this. How do you value games, right? Are you valuing the time you spent played or how much you enjoyed it versus, or the experience or whatever it is? And I think as I've gotten older, I think it's moved more towards, I just want to experience something heavy. I want it different, you know, something I wasn't expecting, more so than, I don't care as much about, okay, I paid $60. I should be able to play for 100 hours.
Which is funny because I think the marketing in gaming has flipped around. I feel like more recently I hear all these advertisements about hundreds of hours of gaming.
Yeah.
So The Witcher, before it came out, they said it could take you 200 hours.
Yeah,
we were talking about The Witness.
Now, that's a pretty old metric, I think. And I mean, because I know it's an old metric because I grew up on role-playing games, and that was always discussed, like how many hours of gameplay.
Huh.
Like, that wasn't even a thing, really, outside of the role-playing genre back in the 90s. Like,
right.
They didn't really talk about how long it takes to beat the game.
Yeah.
Because action side-scrollers like
Ninja Turtles.
Well, yeah, because a lot of that stuff was pulling in from the arcades, right? So once you got to the Super Nintendo and the Sega Genesis 16, you could take arcade games and pull them in and play them with mostly fidelity on your TV, right? And so arcade games, they're like an hour at the most.
It's just they're incredibly difficult. So,
So because, you know, they're trying to get quarter drops.
Right.
So.
But I feel like even then the angle was different. There was a feeling of like, how long will it take me to beat this game? Whereas now it's part of the marketing saying we have hundreds of hours of content.
Yeah.
Rather than like thinking about how long is it going to take me to kill Sephiroth?
Well, not necessarily, because I mean, again, JRPGs don't count, but but I mean, you know, playing Ultima, playing Ultima 6, Ultima 7, you know, and some of these other role playing games, Lands of Lore and stuff like that, it was on the box, like 40 hours of gameplay, 30 hours of gameplay, and it was exciting, like, oh, I'm going to be able to play for however long that is, you know. And
the next day you've spent 40 hours straight.
You know, and then when you started to make a transition from RPGs to the new hotness of first-person shooters, it wasn't as big a deal because it was harder to make a bunch of content. It just started to get repetitive, right? Like Doom.
Yeah.
The original Doom and Wolfenstein, I think they're maybe 3 hours if you can live that long.
There are a lot of levels, though, but it gets super repetitive. Well, I remember trying to replay it, and boy.
Look at Rocket League, right? I mean, that has, like, virtually no content. It's
five
levels.
That's when you get into replayability with RTSs, actually.
Yeah.
So that's when you start to get into replayability, and they have a campaign, but it's kind of a throwaway story, and they don't
StarCraft
really talk about
an amazing campaign, by the way.
Yeah, but still,
I'm now going,
you don't
finally sitting down and doing that.
You don't sit down
phenomenal.
And talk about how many hours of gameplay StarCraft is, because
no,
it's a given that
not.
It's unlimited.
Yeah, effectively. So, you know, to get
I
to
mean,
their,
the best example of that is League of Legends. I mean, it's the same map over
yeah,
and over
right.
and over
well,
again.
Well,
and people
that's,
put thousands of hours. I mean, people put hundreds of hours into a lot of RPGs, but it is definitely a lot of players in League put thousands of hours into.
Yeah. And so that was the next thing I was going to say with MOBAs. I've not paid anything. I think
I know, that's crazy.
I think I maybe spent, just as an experiment, $20 on League.
Dave
a
spent
year or
more
two.
Than you.
Yeah. But when I was playing it a lot, and I was like, okay, let me get some skins. And I think I spent $20 to get the credits to get the skins. But Heroes of the Storm, you know, you've heard me talk about that. Mm-hmm. I haven't paid a single penny for that game. And that's, other than Marvel Puzzle Quest, that's the game I've played the most this
you
year.
You spent thousands of dollars in Marvel Puzzle Quest.
Yeah, probably. No. But so, you know, it's hard to value a game based on hours. I think that's an antiquated
yes,
metric.
Yes, I agree.
It doesn't
agree.
Really apply anymore. When you talk about the story behind, especially with indie developers and stuff like that, mm-hmm. when you hear a story, then maybe, yeah, I'm more inclined to pay that, even though it's maybe not the game I was hoping would, you know, would be made. It's not like, oh, I only want this game to be made, Gone Home or whatever. But I've heard so many good things about it that if I ever play it, yeah. I definitely will. Rather than hey, share it on Steam, I'll probably just buy it
yep.
and play it. So, you know, the other metric, if you really want to use time, just to put it in perspective, you know, two people go out to a movie, that's $20, and
yep.
it's 2 hours,
yep.
3 hours long. And so you got a game for $20 and you can play it, and anybody else you invite to your house can play it, and maybe there's some replay value to mm-hmm. it. So as far as just that metric of entertainment and time, I don't think it's that crazy to pay $20 for a 2 hour or 3 hour game.
It might not be crazy, and yeah, it is interesting when you put it into perspective. It's the same thing, like people always point out, you know, every morning it's very common for people to spend like $5 at Starbucks. That's
yeah.
That's, you know, a couple of those you have one of these games. Mm-hmm. But I still think for a lot of people, in the same way the, I guess, app conundrum where you can't charge more than 99 cents, people have a different mindset. And I wonder, I don't actually know, I don't think I've talked to you about this, but what you go into gaming for, Josiah, in that, like you, it's funny, you went...
For the women.
He's a
so
major hit.
Korea.
You pointed out MOBAs and free-to-play games, which are literally the opposite end of games like Gone Home, games like that, Dragon Cancer, because those are games that are free-to-play, and you could potentially play forever
limitless hours, yeah.
without ever spending a penny, versus games where you have to spend a bunch and you only play for a few hours, and it's more like a movie in a way.
Yeah.
Where, and actually, there has to be that focus, because if it's only a couple-hour experience, there's probably not much replayability.
Yeah. I mean, this goes back. This is what I was saying before, though. Is like, as I've gotten older, I appreciate experience more so than just time spent. And and now that I have much less time to spend playing games in the last year, and definitely this year is going to be the same. Like, I'm very, very conscious of what I'm buying, what games I'm going to play. So I'm not going to pick up, I'm not going to pick up Call of Duty anymore, like we used to play, right? Like classic film and television, of course. But no, like I'm conscious about what I spend my time playing, and now it's especially, and you know, we talked about this with the Oculus too. Like I'm more excited about the experiences
yeah.
to be had in those rather than okay, let me play The Witcher in virtual reality.
Well, it's funny too because I feel like a lot of games, since open world is the new, you know, fun thing to add to your game, that is where a lot of filler comes from, because
right.
once you make it open world, you have
it's
the
endless.
I guess Assassin's Creed model where you just have all these little checkpoints that you can fill out. Think about it. GTA, Assassin's Creed, Just Cause,
Fallout. Fallout 4.
Saints Row, Fallout, Witcher. They all, once they go open world, there's this idea that you can just pad it with all these. Sometimes they're meaningless. A lot of people talk about how good The Witcher's quests were and things like that. But a lot of these games, Watch Dogs is a great example of just useless quests. And they do that to fill time so you feel like there's tons of content you got for $60 as opposed to a game. I mean.
Right, which is funny because a lot of those games, their story is only 15 hours too. Like if you only play the main storyline of like Skyrim, for example, it's like 15 hours, something like that.
It's just more about, exploring and things like that. Yeah. And I don't know. I definitely am with you on the experiencing. And actually, I've soured significantly on open world games because it's just too much to do. Like you actually said this. I remember. really?
You're not a real gamer, Sean.
So you made this point. You were playing The Witcher 3. And, you know, there's a point. Since it's open world, there's a point where they say, hey, you can play past this point, but this is the end game, so you won't be able to go back. So you're thinking, okay, you're in the final hour of the game.
Like a few, couple hours.
You played at least, 10 hours after that point?
I think I played probably about half as much as what I've already played again after that.
Insane.
Which is crazy. Like, it was all story stuff, too, which is wild. Witcher did a phenomenal job in narrative, especially on side quests. You pointed this out. Like, that's kind of an classic.
I don't know, though.
Right,
I will say, sorry, not to random dig at The Witcher. I feel like whenever anybody brings up The Witcher, they bring up two quests every single time. Literally every podcast.
No spoilers. No spoilers.
I know. I won't say them, but there are two quests at every. And I'm just thinking, if their quests are so great, why does everybody bring up the same exact?
Think about The Witcher compared to like GTA side quests. I guess you didn't play that, or Skyrim.
No, I did. I've played every GTA except for 5. Well, I've played 5, but I haven't.
That's what's 5.
Yeah.
Or
I thought GTA actually they were one of the first to do pretty diverse.
But like Skyrim side quests,
but I'm
right?
So down on Skyrim,
right?
Too.
But I mean, like, there's a big difference between The Witcher side. This is off topic.
Okay. Now for the change-up. Were The Witcher side quests good?
And everything.
But, that was a random side note. But, I'm definitely with you on the experience is far more important. And I'm finding myself playing more short games.
Yeah.
And I feel as gaming evolves, I mean, you can't. I mean, I guess Witcher to many bucks this trend, but typically you can't write high quality content that's hundreds of hours. It's very difficult. Even TV shows, like, you know, TV shows are much longer form than movies, and you're looking at maybe 12, maybe 24 hours over an entire year. Never mind a video game where people, how do you create high quality content
for
like
four
that
times
much?
As much?
It's
just
ridiculous. So I'm definitely into shorter games, but there's definitely part of me that feels like, with that Dragon Cancer,
what are you playing right
feeling
now?
Like, I'm not really playing it. Oh, I just finished Grow Home. That was fun. It was really short. I played it because it was really short and it was fun.
So I'm trying to play three games at a time, two indies and one main game, but I only play like an hour a day at most. So I'm playing StarCraft 2, which is my big one, and then I'm playing Undertale and Banner Saga as my two indie games.
How's
which
Undertale
are both short.
So far?
I've only gotten like through the intro.
It's terrible at the beginning.
It's quirky. It's still, you know, it's different. I'm clearly sticking through it because of what everybody else said at this point. But
okay, so cool question. Realistically, so we said in the change-up that we would all play That Dragon Cancer.
Yep.
Are you guys, knowing that's 3 hours, but you're hearing all this good press, are you guys going to pay $15 for it? Because it's on all
our
platforms.
Absolutely.
Yeah, when I play it, I'll pay for it.
I guess I don't mean are you going to pirate it or not, but will it make you less inclined to just play it? I assume if you're not going to buy it, you're not going
to
play it.
Like I said, I think this is, like Banner Saga, for example, I waited till it was on sale to get, right? It was like $5 versus $20.
Yeah,
I waited for that.
Yeah,
like, that Dragon Cancer, I think, is different.
Yeah, let's forget the charity aspect. Let's say Gone Home then. And I think this is the part where you said you're totally right. I mean, going to one movie, and it could be an average movie, would cost the same amount as this game. Mm-hmm. But there is some weird thing in my brain that's thinking, for such a short experience, do I want to pay $15?
Right.
Which at the end of the day, $15 is not going to hurt me. But and as you know, as good as this game supposedly is, it definitely makes me think about it. And it's this weird syndrome that I have where I just feel.
So you're
going to
be playing it at my house. That's what you're saying. Yeah,
I mean, well, we share Steam accounts, or we do the family sharing.
We
so don't tell Valve. They're not listening.
Your brothers,
Gabe.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly. Yeah. You didn't know this?
Exactly. My name is Sean Steller. SS. Oh, that's terrible.
So anyway, that's going to do it for this week's episode of The Unwind. Thank you so much for listening. You can subscribe to us on the iTunes and Stitcher. You can find our YouTube channel by searching for The Commentist, but we'll soon have its own URL, which I think I said last week and it hasn't come yet, but we we will be renaming that shortly. Please share us with your friends. You can leave us comments or submit questions and topics to us directly by going to theunwind.audio. Also, be sure to check out all of our other great podcasts. We're adding a few new ones in the next couple weeks.
Get ready.
So go to the commenters, check all those
hashtag
out.
Hype.
And we'll see you soon. Hurry up, Sean. Play the sound. Oh, you're the worst.
Your internet is terrible.
You're the worst.
Come on, internet.
You're the worst.